Tabitha. When Franklin gets home from his parents' house, it's late, and he's drunk. How was it? Tabitha asks carefully. She expected him hours ago. She finished the first coat of paint in the powder room by 7:30, then decided to see what all the hype was about, so she drove to Menemsha and waited 40 minutes for a lobster roll from Larson's Fish Market. She couldn't get over how mobbed Menemsha was with people waiting for the sunset. It was like a day plucked from the 1970s. Happy people with sandy feet lining the wall overlooking the water, drinking wine from waxy paper cups. A guy with a guitar played Hotel California, then segued into I'd Like to Teach the World to Sing, then transitioned into Beth by Kiss while people sang along. Nantucket didn't have a nightly community gathering like this. The best place to watch the sunset on Nantucket was at Galley Beach Restaurant. When the sun set, the patrons clapped. Then they got back to their vintage Veuve Clicquot and $43 Dover sole. And that, Tabitha supposed, was the difference between the two islands. Well, one of the differences. The lobster roll was delicious, although Tabitha was so hungry by the time she finally got it that she stuffed it unceremoniously into her face, then wished she'd gotten two of them. She expected Franklin to be home by the time she got back, but he wasn't. She tamped down the anger and resentment that arose. They had been together such a short time, she hardly owned him. Now here he is, smelling like he dove into a swimming pool filled with Jameson. It was, Franklin says, it was. Tabitha waits. I stopped by the wharf on my way home, he says. Wharf pub.
Okay, Tabitha says. She tries to keep her voice neutral. Something is bothering him. Or maybe he just needed to blow off steam. Maybe he had friends to see. Maybe going to the wharf pub is something he always does after having dinner at his parents' house. You said something earlier that made me wonder, he says. You said Wyatt was your children's father. But I've only heard you talk about Ainsley. Do you have a child I don't know about? Tabitha grows rigid. Here it is then. It's her chance. And yet she doesn't like having it forced upon her. Her first instinct is to deflect the question, or even lie. Then she can backpedal later. She doesn't want to lie to Franklin. She takes a deep breath. It's dark and late, and Franklin is drunk. Somehow this all serves to make saying the words easier. Had, she says. I had a son named Julian. Tabitha. He died, Tabitha says. Incredibly, she remains dry-eyed. She speaks like she's reading words off a page. He was born at 28 weeks. That's very premature. His lungs? Well, it's always the lungs with preemies. He stayed in the NICU for 10 weeks, up in Boston, and I stayed with him. And then, finally, they let him come home. He still wasn't completely healthy, we knew that, so we rented a cottage across the street from the hospital here. Tabitha swallows. It was hell. I didn't sleep. It's probably fair to say I didn't sleep the entire time he was alive. That must have been so. But his voice trails off, as if he doesn't know what word to choose. As if he doesn't know what it must have been like. And he's right. He doesn't know. I was half out of my mind, Tabitha says. That's an expression, but in my case, it was true. I was certifiably insane. All that mattered was my baby. I wanted him back in the hospital, but our insurance had run out, and Wyatt refused to let me take money from Eleanor. Plus, I mean, the baby was fine. Not thriving, maybe. Not fat or bouncing. But he was fine. The tears start as Tabitha remembers Julian focusing his eyes and holding up his head. He had grabbed her finger. He never cried, not in the robust way of a newborn anyway, and that had bothered Tabitha. He made a weak bleeding noise when he was hungry or wet, That was all his little lungs, the size of eggs, could produce. But the doctors had said he was out of the woods. How many times had that phrase been uttered? Out of the woods, like a child in a fairy tale, safe from bears, snakes, evil witches living in crooked houses. The doctors had also made it clear that there were no guarantees. Every premature baby was at risk. And Julian had been slow to gain weight. At times, he had been listless and difficult to feed. Tabitha had pumped breast milk night and day, believing that would keep him alive, even though Wyatt pointed out that he ate more when they gave him formula. Wyatt had tried. Tabitha had to admit that. He had wanted to help both Julian and Tabitha. That was why, in the second week of August, when Julian seemed better and Tabitha was most definitely showing signs of a frayed psyche, crying all the time, dropping dishes, pulling her hair out in clumps, Wyatt had called Harper on the vineyard, finally taking her up on her offer to help. Wildflowers, champagne on the edge of the dock, their feet skimming the top of the water, dancing at the chicken box. I can't live with or without you. Tabitha can't go any further. He died, she says. August 15th, 2003. He was 2 months, 2 weeks, and 5 days old. Franklin lies down next to Tabitha, but promptly passes out on top of the covers. For the first time, he snores, and she can't fall asleep. They don't speak of it again. Tabitha wonders if Franklin remembers the conversation, but it isn't anything she wants to revisit, especially not in the bright sunlight while they're trying to renovate Billy's house. Even hungover, Franklin installs the new kitchen cabinets the next day and sets in the porcelain farmhouse sink. There are two Portuguese guys from Fall River, both named Paolo, sanding down the floors in the living and dining rooms, and a plumbing crew from Mashpee is upstairs redoing the master and second bathrooms. Tad is going to tile the master bath, but for right now, he's tearing out the carpet upstairs. As soon as the carpet is out, Tabitha will paint. She also goes out to get sandwiches for everyone from Lucky Hank's, which costs her $110 and takes 90 minutes because of traffic. But still, everything is good, she tells herself. Everything is fine. That afternoon, Ainsley calls, and Tabitha is heartened. This is the first unsolicited phone call from her daughter since she's left. Tabitha has no intention of bringing up the party at the store, but somehow the topic pops out of her, and once Tabitha gets started, she can't stop. It's almost as if she's trying to sabotage her own happiness, because she makes Ainsley tell her whom Harper hired to replace Mary Jo. Kaylee. Harper hired Kaylee. No sooner has Tabitha had time to digest this fact, and yes, a part of her is incensed, but part of her is thinking Kaylee would be an asset to the store. Even Eleanor might agree with that. Then Harper calls, screaming like her head is on fire. She has found out that Tabitha is renovating instead of tearing the house down. She's upset that Tabitha is turning Billy's house into a civilized place where some family might live a life of happy refinement. Who's working on it for you? Harper asks after she's gone on her rampage. Who are you using as a contractor? Tabitha will not tell her. There is no way she's going to let Harper interfere with what's going on here. She hangs up. Tomorrow, a landscaping crew from Billerica is coming. They are going to mow the lawn and tear out all the overgrowth, the ugly bushes, the crooked pines, the vines, the weeds, and the sad little vegetable garden. They will sod and mulch, cut beds, plant hydrangeas and perennials. It will be Tabitha's job to water, water, water. The landscaper grew up on the vineyard and is a good friend of Franklin's. His name is Richie Grennan, and he will be staying at Franklin's house for the 2 days it will take to do the work. Richie and I played football together. He's like a brother to me. I trust him with my life, Franklin says. Tabitha expects to like Richie, and she expects Richie to like her back. After all, they both love Franklin. Or if Richie doesn't believe that Tabitha loves Franklin, their relationship being too new, she at least expects him to like her because she's paying $15,000 for him to do the work on the yard. Richie is short and fair with a sunburn that ends at the collar and sleeves of his grass-stained t-shirt. He has bright blue eyes and no lips. He nods at Tabitha and says, "How are ya?" His hands remain on his hips. He's wearing khaki cargo shorts with a leather belt and work boots. Tabitha smiles. "How are you?" she says with a touch of flirtatiousness. "I really appreciate your coming to do this." She is interrupted by Franklin, who bounds past her and picks Richie up clear off the ground. Richie finally smiles. Then Franklin asks if he wants to see the yard, and the three of them head back, with Tabitha trailing behind. Maybe Richie doesn't relate well to women, Tabitha thinks. Fine, she won't get offended. She listens to Franklin explain to Richie exactly what they want. She doesn't interject because Franklin is on point. He mentions everything they talked about in a logical order. He is her general contractor, so that's his job. He is also her lover, but what does that matter to Richie? Richie and his crew get to work. Tabitha goes to Skinny's for sandwiches because Franklin mentioned that it used to be Richie's favorite place. He likes the chicken Philly. Tabitha gets him two of them. After lunch, Tabitha paints the small third bedroom a placid color called St. Giles Green. Tad is tiling the master bath in honey-colored marble. Franklin is working with the stone guy in the kitchen. The countertops are oiled soapstone except for one section, which is butcher block. The plumbers from Mashpee have hooked up the Sub-Zero fridge and the standalone ice machine, and they have installed the fixtures over the farmhouse sink. The gas guy is due that afternoon to hook up the Wolf Range, 6 burners and a griddle. Out back, Richie is driving a front-end loader and directing his crew of 5. He already has half the yard cleared. Tabitha can't get over how much better it looks. She is thrilled at the transformation of the house, but something feels off. Maybe it's Richie, she thinks. Franklin and Richie ate their sandwiches out back, sitting side by side on the bumper of Franklin's truck. Tabitha decided to let them have time alone to catch up, and Franklin either noticed and didn't say anything or didn't notice. His attitude toward her is 1 degree cooler than usual, she thinks. She worries that the story about Julian has changed things. Franklin sees her differently, and not for the better. He must see her now as a person who failed at the most basic task that we, as humans, are given, to keep our children alive. Tabitha closes herself in the powder room, which, at the moment, is the only functioning bathroom, and splashes water on her face. She needs to get a grip. There is no way someone as evolved as Franklin would think less of her because she lost a child. He went through so much with his girlfriend Patty. Surely, of all the men Tabitha knows, Franklin is the most equipped to handle the story of Julian. So then what's wrong? Probably he's just tired. And Tabitha is tired and upset about Harper. And it's hot. She needs to stop imagining things. That night, Franklin announces that he and Richie are going to dinner at Offshore Ale, and then, most likely, they're going night fishing. Oh, Tabitha says, okay. She feels stung but tries not to let it show. Franklin kisses her goodbye on the nose. The nose, as though she's 5 years old. Richie is already outside climbing into Franklin's truck, so Tabitha grabs Franklin by the shirt buttons and says, hey. Hey, what? Is something wrong? No, Franklin says. Then kiss me like you mean it, please. Franklin looks at her a second. Then he places his hands on either side of her face and delivers the sexiest kiss she has ever received. It's not too much. If anything, it's just shy of enough. She wants, needs, deeper, longer, harder. Her legs have turned to sawdust, dandelion fluff, something that can be blown away. Was that what you wanted? he asks. She can't speak.
Okay, then, he says.
He turns and walks out the door.
Tabitha puts a second coat of Paul Revere's ride on the powder room walls. Then, since she's on a roll, she starts on the lavender room with an oil-based primer called Kills. She bids the lavender adieu. There is zen in painting, she finds, but her mind keeps turning over the slight changes in Franklin's behavior. They went from a full-on sex and love binge to, well, they'd had sex early that morning before Tad and Richie arrived, but sex isn't exactly what Tabitha is craving. She misses tenderness, hand-holding, Franklin's finger running along her cheekbone, his mouth on the back of her neck. Tabitha imagines Franklin and Richie out at Offshore Ale, flirting with the young waitresses in tight t-shirts and short shorts. Franklin probably knows them all by name. As the walls of the lavender bedroom become white, Tabitha writes a story across them. Franklin follows one of the young waitresses into the kitchen. They find a dark corner, a pantry maybe, or the room where the kegs are stored. And Franklin kisses the waitress the way he has just kissed Tabitha. The waitress slides her hand down the front of Franklin's jeans. Tabitha wonders what he meant by night fishing. Will they actually go fishing at night? Or is it a euphemism for something else? Stop, she tells herself. The door to the bedroom is closed. Possibly the fumes are getting to her. She has no reason to doubt Franklin, but he is a single man out with one of his single friends. They are drinking. And who's to say this relationship is exclusive? They haven't defined it. They haven't set any boundaries or parameters. They've basically been living together for 2 weeks, but Franklin hasn't called her his girlfriend. He didn't take her to meet his parents. She hasn't been back to his house since that first night. She never learned the address, and she isn't confident she could find it again, although she's pretty sure it's somewhere in Oak Bluffs. What does Tabitha know about him, really? He picked her up at a bar. Who's to say he won't pick up someone else tonight? She should go somewhere, to dinner or the movies. She overheard someone at Skinny's today talking about eating at Alchemy. Tabitha could easily take a shower, put on a dress, and go find trouble of her own. Instead, she pulls a beer out of the cooler that Franklin keeps on the back deck. Then she fishes one of the Ambien she stole from Eleanor's stash out of her purse. She is so agitated that she takes a second Ambien and wanders up to the master bedroom because it's now the only place to sleep. She lies face down on her father's bed and thinks that she would like to cry, except that she's suddenly too tired to summon the effort. She hears footsteps on the stairs and opens her eyes to see Tad and his Carhartts carrying his tiling trowel. He walks past her into the master bathroom. Tabitha's mouth is cottony. She wants to sit up, but she can't. She succumbs. She opens her eyes. Where is she? It takes her a minute. Nantucket, she thinks. No, the vineyard. Billy's house. Billy's room. She turns her head. Her neck is stiff. There's an old-fashioned clock radio on the nightstand. The glowing blue numbers say it's 1:13. Billy's clock is wrong, which is not surprising. Everything about this house is wrong. Tabitha reaches her arms out to her sides so that her body is in the shape of a cross. No Franklin. She eyes the door to the master bathroom. It's closed tight, and there doesn't seem to be any activity on the other side. But wasn't Tad just there? Or did she dream that? When she checks her phone, she sees that it is 1:15, in the afternoon. She is appalled at herself. The Ambien knocked her out for 15 hours, and she still feels woozy. There are no texts and no missed calls from Franklin, which is a good thing. He must be downstairs working. She can't imagine how she'll explain sleeping the morning away. She slinks downstairs and is met with the powerful smell of polyurethane.
The Portuguese Paulos are varnishing the floors. They look gorgeous, honey-toned and silky. And they were there all along, smothered underneath the hideous carpeting. Franklin? She calls out.
No here, one of the Paulos says.
No? Tabitha says. She tries to remember what was on the docket for today. Kitchen, she thought. Getting to the kitchen can only be done by walking the far perimeter of the living room, past the powder room, and into the dining area. Through the skinny dining room windows, Tabitha sees Richie on a spade digging a hole for the mature hydrangeas, whose roots are wrapped in burlap. Richie is here. That's good, she supposes. He and Franklin didn't get lost down the rabbit hole. Tabitha finds Tad in the kitchen, tiling the backsplash behind the range. Hey, she says. Sorry I slept for so long. Tad barely looks up.
You're not on my payroll.
No, I know, she says. It's just, well, I like to get up and at 'em. She watches Tad place the smoky glass tile row by row. This kitchen is going to be spectacular. She can't believe the difference. She clears her throat. She could use a glass of ice water, some Motrin, some strong coffee. Do you know where Franklin is?
No,
Tad says. He doesn't offer anything else, and Tabitha listens to the rasping noise of the trowel against the wall. Tabitha grabs her bag and heads to her car, which has been baking in the midday sun and is now an oven, the seats too hot to sit on. She puts down the windows and waits a few seconds before climbing in. She cranks the AC and backs out of the driveway. Did Franklin even come home? Were her paranoid scenarios not so paranoid after all? Has he taken some little chickie up to Cedar Tree Neck to skinny dip in the bay? Would he do that? Tabitha's gut says no. Is she being naive? She doesn't think so. She wonders if Harper somehow found out that Franklin was doing the work on the house. Does she still have connections here? Someone willing to swing by and check on the house? Did Harper call Franklin? Did she threaten him? Or did one of her drug buddies threaten him? Is that why he's staying away? She can't decide if this theory is spot on or completely ridiculous. Tabitha tries to go to Mocha Mott's, but there's no parking. Then she gets stuck in traffic at Five Corners. She calls Franklin's cell. It rings 6 times, then goes to his voicemail. Hey, she says. She's at a loss. Where is he? And what right does she have to know? It feels like the whole world has changed, and she's the last to find out. It's me. She hangs up. Franklin isn't back at the house when she finally returns. She had to go all the way to Tony's Market in OB to get coffee, water, and painkillers, and now she's starting to panic. Something is wrong. She charges up the porch stairs into the kitchen, where Tad is still working. Have you heard from Franklin? She asks.
No, ma'am, he says.
What the hell? She says. She is angry now, angry and worried. She wants to take it out on whoever is available, but Tad is having none of it. He ignores her. You know him far better than I, Tabitha says. Does he pull these little disappearing acts often?
No, Tad says. He doesn't.
He sets the trowel down in the tray and faces her.
Have you called him?
Yes, she says. Voicemail.
Tad nods. I'm sure he'll turn up.
Tabitha doesn't like anything about that statement, so she storms out to the yard. She approaches Richie from behind and gives him a vicious poke on the shoulder. He's behind this change in Franklin somehow. She just knows it.
Where's Franklin? She asks.
Whoa, Richie says.
He turns on her with a venom that Tabitha doesn't understand. What has she ever done to him? Why couldn't he be nicer? Why couldn't he be happy that Franklin has found someone?
I don't appreciate being touched like that.
Sorry, Tabitha says. But she's not sorry. She is so frustrated and so confused that she would like to take Richie's shovel and hit him over the head with it. Do you know where Franklin is?
I haven't seen him since last night, Richie says. He got a phone call and left in the middle of dinner.
What?
Tabitha says. This isn't what she expected to hear.
Phone call from whom?
From Harper? Or someone else?
Is everything okay?
You're asking the wrong guy the wrong questions, Richie says. He checks his watch. We're finishing up now and heading back to America on the 5 o'clock boat. I'd really like that check.
Tabitha glares at him for a second. He wants his check, and Tabitha wants answers. Who called Franklin? What happened? Where is he? You're asking the wrong guy the wrong questions. She would like to take Richie's spade and use it to bury him alive. She should be counting her blessings, however. Richie is leaving.
The check will be on the counter, she says.
Richie leaves, the Paolos leave, and finally Tad packs up to leave. Tabitha forced herself to put a coat of Maid in the Suede on the walls of the formerly lavender room, but after that she is wiped out. So she sits on the back steps and watches the sprinkler water Billy's newly landscaped backyard. There has been no word from Franklin. He's gone. Tabitha thinks about sending an angry text or leaving an infuriated voicemail. He is, after all, her general contractor, and he simply skipped a day of work without notice. Tabitha doesn't care about him as her contractor. She cares about Franklin, her lover. She wants to blame Richie for this mess, but she knows, somehow, that it's her own fault. She should never have told him about Julian. Their new relationship was too fragile to hold the heavy weight of that story.
I'm going, Tad says.
He gets to the bottom step, then turns around.
Will you be okay?
Tabitha laughs, although nothing is funny.
Will I be okay?
I noticed you didn't eat today, Tad says. I'm going to the Wolf's Den for pizza. Why don't you come with me?
It's nice of him to offer, but Tabitha is in no shape to socialize or venture out in public. Her stomach is in knots. She can't imagine eating ever again.
Where is he?
She asks Tad.
Richie said he got a phone call last night and just up and left. And no one has seen him since.
Tad nods.
If I had to guess,
he lets out a stream of air.
What?
Tabitha says. She doesn't know Franklin well enough to even venture a guess. What would she guess? That Franklin is married, his wife has been away, and she returned earlier than expected, possibly with their 4 children in tow?
I would say it's a family matter, Tad says.
Tabitha gasps, even as her suspicions are confirmed.
Is it my sister?
No, Tad says. I'm talking about Franklin's family. His parents, his sister.
His parents? Tabitha asks. His sister?
Tad raises a hand.
I've said more than I should have already, he says. Have a good night.
Tabitha sits on the steps until dark. Then she wanders inside. Will Franklin stay away another night? Apparently he will. She takes another Ambien. Only one. She wakes up at 1:35 in the morning with an idea. The phone book is back on the mantel next to the urn containing Billy's ashes. The Vineyard and Nantucket are probably the only communities left in America where phone books are indispensable. Boat schedules, restaurant menus, addresses.
Addresses?
A check of Phelps offers the following. Phelps, Albert and Lydia, 35 Edgartown Bay Road, ET. Phelps, Franklin, 10 Grovedale Road, OB. Phelps, Sadie, The Upper Crust, 9111 Edgartown West Tisbury Road, VH. Sadie is the sister, Tabitha realizes. Sadie, not Charlotte. But what is the upper crust? She feels like she should know, but she's drawing a blank. She really only cares about Franklin. She plugs 10 Grovedale Road into her phone. A blue dot appears in maps, and she climbs into her car. There is no traffic in the middle of the night, so Tabitha finds herself sitting in front of Franklin's house 10 minutes later. The windows are dark, but Franklin's truck is in the driveway,
and seeing his truck makes Tabitha thrum with nervous energy. He's here. Isn't it enough just to know where he is, finally? No. Tabitha gets out of her car and strides up the walk. She rings the doorbell. She hears him stirring inside, and her nerves shriek. She wants to run. The door opens. Franklin sees her. Immediately, his mouth is on hers, and he's pulling her inside, slamming the door shut. He picks her up and carries her over to the moss-green velvet sofa where he had been sleeping. He lays Tabitha down on the sofa, then tears her $90 t-shirt in half, cups her breast, and feeds it to himself as though it's food and he's starving. Afterward, Tabitha cries. She bleats and howls, no holding back. Every bad thought, every worry, every jealousy, every insecurity comes pouring out. Franklin wipes her tears away with his hands first, then with the napkins that are next to the uneaten takeout dinner from Sharky's on the coffee table.
Why? She says. Did my sister call you and tell you to stop? Did Harper call?
No, he says. The problem is my sister, Sadie. Franklin's sister, Sadie, is the wife of Dr. Reed Zimmer. Franklin's sister, Sadie, is the woman who slapped Tabitha and threw champagne in her face. These are the extenuating circumstances. Franklin sits on the edge of the sofa, holding his head in his hands. I can't work for you anymore, he says, and I can't see you. What? Tabitha says. She's my sister, Franklin says, and Harper is your sister, your twin sister. Exactly, Tabitha says. Harper is my sister. She's not me. We aren't the same, Franklin. You know this. I'm not Harper. I do know that, Franklin says. And I like Harper, regardless of what she's done. But my sister is a mess. She can't handle this development. She and my parents. You're a grown man, Tabitha says. Surely you don't still cater to what your parents think. As soon as the words are out of her mouth, Tabitha pictures Eleanor. Eleanor has ruled Tabitha's every thought and deed for the past 39 years, short of the last few weeks. I'm sorry, Tabitha, Franklin says. It's just bad luck. And I wasn't honest. I should have explained who I was the night I met you at the Ritz. But back then, I didn't think it would matter.
You thought I was a one-night stand, Tabitha says. A throwaway.
Isn't that what you thought? Franklin says. Be honest. I barely knew you. It was for fun.
A drunken fling, Tabitha says.
Isn't that what she thought? She certainly hadn't intended to end up this emotionally vested. I didn't know I was going to fall in love with you, Franklin says.
Are you? Tabitha says. In love with me?
Franklin nods into his hands. I think I am, he whispers. Then he raises his head and gazes into her eyes to deliver the parting blow. But it doesn't matter. Sadie is my family. Harper. They take the Inter-Island Ferry, Harper, Ainsley, and Fish. Kaylee and Megan will mind the shop. This is going to be a short trip, one night, which they will spend in Harper's duplex. Harper says to Ainsley, I'm sure you're anxious to see your mother, but I don't think I'll be able to control my temper around her. Ainsley says, That's okay. I'll see Tabitha, my mother, when she comes back to Nantucket, whenever that is. Thank you, Harper says. She places a protective hand on her abdomen. She is verklempt about Tabitha renovating the house. She understands exactly what happened. Tabitha heard about the party at the store from Megan, and she figured that then gave her the right to do whatever she wanted. There was no way the opportunity to avenge was going to get past Tabitha. She has never let an affront go unanswered. Never. In many ways, Harper and Tabitha are like the Haley Mills characters in The Parent Trap. One cuts the other's dress during the dance. The other sets an elaborate trap of honey and string. But what Tabitha did is more than a prank.
It concerns Harper's livelihood, her survival. Harper needs the money from the proceeds of the sale. Tabitha has no idea how badly Harper needs it. It's disorienting to visit the vineyard in the manner of the lowliest of tourists, the day tripper. The ferry pulls into Oak Bluffs, and Harper is presented with a vista that is as familiar to her as her own kneecaps, yet she sees it with new eyes, the green expanse of Ocean Park, the jaunty colors of the gingerbread houses in the Methodist campground. Harper could take Ainsley on the Flying Horses carousel right now. They could have dinner at the Red Cat. But those things wouldn't make the vineyard feel like home. What makes the vineyard feel like home for Harper are the people. First of all, obviously, Billy. But Billy is dead. From there, it gets even more difficult. Drew, Reed, Brendan. Five of the gingerbread cottages in front of them are owned by the Truman Snyder family, Drew's mother and his aunties, who made Harper the pot of lobster stew. Right now, Drew will be in his cruiser, maybe on Main Street in Edgartown, maybe issuing a parking ticket out in Katama, maybe sitting with his radar gun in the elementary school parking lot. He is so handsome, so well-built, so well-intentioned. He must hate Harper's guts, and for good reason. She used him as a distraction from Reed. Reed is, well, if he's on the vineyard, he's doing a good job of hiding. Harper might be able to ask people she knows, Rooster, Franklin Phelps, Greeny, if they've seen him or heard from him, if they know where he is. I need to talk to him, Harper would say. It's important. But she will leave it at that. Brendan Donegal. Brendan should be sitting by the koi pond at My Toy or walking on East Beach skipping stones, but now Brendan, too, is dead. Harper takes a deep breath, then winds Fish's leash around her wrist as she disembarks from the ferry. Fish pulls her along. He knows they're home. Ainsley is right behind them. Ainsley has aged about 15 years in the last 24 hours, Harper figures. That's what handling a tragedy does to a person. They are renting a car from AA Island Auto Rental on the wharf. It's a short trip, but Harper can't be dependent on cab drivers who may or may not know their way around by now. They pile into a generic gunmetal gray Jeep. Nobody will recognize her. Are you hungry? Harper asks Ainsley.
No,
Ainsley says. Me either, she says. She hasn't been able to eat since Edie's call. Let's go do this, then. Ainsley nods. She gazes out the window.
It's so pretty here, she says.
That it is, Harper says. It's one of those clear blue days that seem to have been made for the vineyard. The heat and humidity are gone. Everything has a crisp edge. How many days like this has Harper taken for granted? Someday she, too, will die. Fish will die. Ainsley will die. The baby inside Harper will die. It's a grim train of thought, but it's not nearly as daunting as what lies ahead. Harper has to see Edie and, in her own way, say goodbye to Brendan. In Edgartown, Harper obeys every traffic law and speed limit. She lets a driver from Tisbury Taxi go in front of her at the triangle. There is, she thinks, a first time for everything. She can't have Drew or anyone else from the Edgartown police pulling her over. She drives down Main Street, Ainsley oohing and awing over the old Wailing Church and Preservation Hall. Then Harper pulls in line for the on-time 3, even though the line is longer by 2 cars than the one for the on-time 2. But Harper is avoiding everyone she knows, including Indira Mayhew, the ferrymaster on the on-time 2. She puts down the window to buy a ticket.
Long time no see, my friend.
Harper turns. Indira is here, working on the 3. Hi, Harper says. Yes, I've been away.
Anywhere good? Indira asks.
Nantucket, Harper says.
You poor child, Indira says.
Then she smiles.
I'm kidding. My father used to love taking our boat over to Tuckernuck. And on rare occasions, we went to the Big Island.
I remember Cokes and oyster crackers at the Anglers Club.
It's good to see you, Harper says.
When the light turns green, she drives onto the ferry.
Are you okay?
Ainsley asks.
No,
Harper says.
Chappaquiddick has changed. It used to bring Harper a sense of peace and love. Now she feels sadness and regret.
Brendan,
she cries out in her mind. She feels it's her fault.
When she passes the entrance to My Toy, her heart keens. She continues down Chappaquiddick Road until she reaches the Donegal residence. Edie is expecting her. She is sitting on the old-fashioned bench swing on her front porch, and when Harper pulls in, she stands. Harper gets out of the car. Ainsley follows, bringing fish on a leash.
Edie, Harper says, I'm so sorry.
She embraces the tiny woman at the top of the porch stairs. Then she turns to introduce Ainsley.
My niece, Ainsley, she says, and this is Fish.
Fish, Edie says, and she bends down to stroke Fish under the chin.
Brendan used to talk about fish all the time.
I admit it took me a while to figure out that Fish was a dog. Edie smiles sadly at Ainsley.
My son got things mixed up at times.
I'm sorry for your loss, Ainsley says.
Edie nods, lips pressed together so tightly they look bloodless.
Would you like to take Fish for a walk on our beach? She asks her.
I'd love to spend a few minutes with your aunt alone.
Absolutely, Ainsley says.
You can just follow the path around the house, Edie says.
Ainsley leads Fish down the porch steps and around a robust pink hydrangea bush, the strawberry sundae variety, Harper notes, because she still has a landscaper's sensibility.
Shall we walk to My Toy? Edie asks.
Harper nods, then holds Edie's arm as they descend the stairs.
This is no one's fault, Edie says. Not mine, and certainly not yours. So if you're harboring any guilt, I want you to let it go.
I should have been here, Harper says.
I should have come when you called.
It wouldn't have made a difference, Edie says.
Brendan's accident left him damaged, but that wasn't the problem.
The problem was that he was still intact enough to realize how damaged he was. He knew he was limited, and he hated it. He said it was like his mind was in a straitjacket. He would look at his feet and know what movements he needed to make to tie his shoes, but he couldn't get his hands to cooperate. We were lucky he lasted as long as he did.
Where did he get the pills? Harper asks.
One of his friends, Edie says.
Or former friends.
They all did drugs, those surf boys.
Harper nods. True enough. I didn't know that Brendan still talked to any of those guys.
Every once in a while, one of them would check in, Edie says.
Spider and Doobie, mostly. They would call after I'd bumped into them at Kronig's. Seeing me made them feel guilty.
They loved Brendan, Harper says.
We all loved Brendan, worshipped him back in the day. He was so much better than anyone else. He was a demigod. I remember being so flattered that he even knew my name years and years ago, back when I worked at Mad Martha's. And then,
here Harper censors herself. She wants to be honest with Edie, but not so honest that she ruins the moment. And then after his accident, I mean, I knew he wasn't the same, but I was still, I don't know, I guess you'd say starstruck at first. Here was Brendan Donegal, who had won so many titles and traveled to so many countries, who had surfed with Kelly Slater and John Florence, and he was suddenly accessible to me.
Harper swallows. Does this sound awful? Does it sound like she was somehow happy that Brendan had his accident because it gave her a chance to be close to him?
I soon came to love and appreciate the person Brendan had become. After a while, I forgot that Brendan the surfer even existed. His past didn't matter. My past didn't matter. That was the gift of being with Brendan. He kept you in the moment.
Harper closes her eyes. It's hot. The pond is still. The coffee is strong. Your eyes are sad. Every Wednesday afternoon and every Sunday morning were theirs, together. Come back, please. They are at the entrance to My Toy now, and both of them hesitate.
I donated money here in his name, Edie says. There will be a bench or a sculpture. I haven't decided what exactly, but I wanted something here on Chappie that would honor him, that I can visit, that you can visit.
That's a beautiful idea, Harper says. Have you changed your mind about a service?
No, Edie says. I had the body cremated. I'll bury the ashes in the family plot, next to his father. The priest will come, but no service.
Harper nods. They have entered the garden, and they automatically fall quiet. It's the blessing of My Toy, the possibility of silence, of stillness, of contemplation. They cross the footbridge. Harper gazes down at the koi swimming. Then she and Edie sit down side by side on the red bench. Harper's pain will never be greater than it is right now. She had never imagined coming to My Toy without Brendan. The place and the man and their relationship were three strands, braided together. She knows she should feel grateful. After all, what if she had never found him? His friendship was such a gift. He appeared to her when everyone else on the island had forsaken her, when she felt wicked and cheap. He arrived to make her feel valued and worthwhile. Suddenly, the tears fall. She is crying, and there is no stopping her. She wishes she had the stiff upper lip of Edie and Eleanor's generation. But, oh well. Possibly Edie isn't too reserved to cry, simply too sad. Her grief so deep and embedded that it won't break loose. Edie pulls a handkerchief out of the pocket of her pants and hands it to Harper, who accepts it gratefully and blows her nose.
I'm pregnant, Harper says.
Edie, who is already sitting ramrod straight, seems to grow an inch.
Is the child Brendan's?
No, Harper says, it's not. Brendan and I never...
Oh, Edie says, I wasn't sure.
I wish it were his, Harper says, then realizes this is the utter truth. But of course the baby is Reed's, conceived that fateful night at Lucy Vincent when Reed recklessly made love to her without protection. More than anything, I wish it were. Edie stands on the porch and waves as Harper backs out of the driveway.
Was it as bad as you thought?
Ainsley asks, once they are back on Chappie Road, headed for the ferry.
No,
Harper says. Walking back from My Toy, Edie had said,
if you need a place to stay, before or after the baby is born, I don't want to assume anything. But if you need a place, the cottage, Brendan's cottage, is yours free of charge for as long as you want it.
Edie, thank you. Harper said. Tears had threatened again, tears of fear and confusion, because Harper wasn't at all sure what her future held. Would she be with Reed or go it alone? Would she be able to find a job? Or would she have to rely on the eventual proceeds from the sale of Billy's house? She tries to picture living on Chappie through the fall and winter. Would that be the worst thing? I'm not sure what my plans include, but that offer means a lot. And who knows? I might take you up on it.
I hope you do, Edie said.
She had squeezed Harper's hand.
Imagine, a baby.
Harper drives to Tisbury, to her duplex, which is stuffy and hot. Harper runs around, opening windows, apologizing to Ainsley. Compared to the carriage house, her duplex is as underwhelming and anonymous as a suite at the Residence Inn.
It's fine, Ainsley says. I really just want to walk around, shop a little, see Vineyard Haven. Can I walk to town from here?
You can, Harper says, but it's far. I'll drop you off, then you can call me when you're ready to come home. How does that sound?
Great, Ainsley says. Thank you.
Harper lets Ainsley out at Five Corners. One thing she has not missed is the traffic.
It's insane, worse than Harper remembers, and it's not even August. While she's sitting in an endless line of cars waiting to turn, Fish asleep across the back seat, Harper eyes the road that will take her past Billy's house. Should she do a drive-by? See what the place looks like and figure out exactly whom Tabitha found to do the work? Harper is freshly incredulous that Tabitha made such an enormous unilateral decision. Harper needs money, and she needs it soon. She has a baby on the way. But Tabitha, of course, doesn't know that. Harper fights the urge to drive past Billy's. In her fragile emotional state, she wants to avoid an in-person confrontation, because that is undoubtedly what it will become. This trip had one purpose. That purpose has been served. Harper will pick Ainsley up at 7:30, take her to the Red Cat for dinner, and afterward go home to bed. Then maybe, in the morning, Harper will swing by Morning Glory Farm for a couple of muffins, just so Ainsley can experience one. Then back to Nantucket on the noon boat. Harper pulls up in front of the duplex. There is nothing to do inside. Coming back to the vineyard like this was a mistake. Temptation is everywhere. Harper thinks about trying to find Drew so she can apologize. Will he appreciate that or find it patronizing? And then there's Reed. Reed. Harper visualizes herself driving past the hospital, past his house, past Sadie's pie shop. She can drive out to Aquinnah on State Road and come back on South Road in the hope that maybe he's riding his bike. Does he have a favorite beach? Lobsterville? Great Rock Bite? Harper has never asked him. He's a doctor. Maybe he doesn't go to the beach. She will drive past Billy's house, she decides. It's the safest thing she can do. She loops in the back way, hoping and praying that Tabitha is out so she can sneak in and get a better look. As she approaches, she sees a green truck pulling out of the backyard. It's Tad, the Irish carpenter. Harper knows him from around. He used to date one of the other landscapers who worked for Jude, a girl named Corey, but Harper is pretty sure they broke up. She has seen Tad out at the Ritz and the tram post, but always alone. Is he working on the house? How did Tabitha find him? Tad is friends with Franklin Phelps, but maybe that connection didn't come up or didn't matter. Maybe in the weeks since Harper has been away, everyone has forgotten about Harper and Reed Zimmer. Maybe it wasn't that big a deal to begin with. Now that Harper has been away, it seems possible. After all, summer is in full swing. There are 90,000 people on this island. 90,000. And surely there are more exciting things to talk about. Harper waits across the street until Tad's truck turns the corner. Then she creeps along until she has a clear line of vision into the backyard. Oh my, she thinks. The backyard has been completely transformed. The lawn is now carpeted with green grass. There are beds of perennials and hydrangeas. All the scrub has been removed, and the vegetable garden is gone. How did Tabitha find anyone willing to do this? Harper didn't think there was a landscaper on the island who was willing to work on a frost house. The house seems quiet. Curiosity overwhelms Harper. This is Billy's house, and for her first 10 years on the vineyard, it was also her house. It's her house once again, half of it willed to her. She doesn't have to feel like a prowler or an intruder. She has every right to go inside. More than every right. She marches up the back steps. The door into the kitchen is unlocked. Astonished doesn't begin to explain how Harper feels when she walks inside. She cannot believe the transformation. Her mouth drops open as she runs her hand over the stone countertops and as she opens the cabinets, which are the color of burned honey. The hinges are like butter. The wood feels solid and true. The floor is still plywood, but the appliances are in. Sub-Zero fridge, Wolf Range, Bosch dishwasher. There's a separate ice maker and a wine fridge. She blinks and turns in a circle. This is Billy's kitchen, right?
This is his house? Harper steps into the living and dining area. The walls have been painted the color of custard, and the floors are random width heart pine. Was this what was hiding under the carpeting all these years? The floors are sumptuous, and the overall effect of the room is bright, clean, elegant. Harper peeks in the powder room. Gone is the Jaws poster and the unspeakably smelly toilet. The walls are pewter, and there is a sleek white glass column for a sink. Harper didn't even realize sinks like this existed except in the pages of magazines. She did it, Harper thinks. Instead of tearing down Billy's house and turning it into a pile of rubble, Tabitha saved it. Harper feels simultaneously proud of her sister and ashamed of herself for being so short-sighted. Harper tries not to guess how much money Tabitha spent to make this happen. It's not like she plunked the money down on a craps table in Vegas, though. They will sell this house. Harper can see that now. They will see a sizable payday. Harper isn't sure why she's surprised that Tabitha was right about this. Tabitha is always right. Harper approaches the stairs. The crappy mustard-yellow Aztec print carpet has been removed. The wooden treads are exposed and now feature a navy blue wool runner with a white diamond pattern. Classic. Harper looks up. The world's ugliest chandelier has been replaced by a simple blown glass globe surrounding an Edison bulb. Gorgeous. A staircase that used to be merely a means to an end is now a work of art in and of itself. As Harper climbs the stairs, she hears a noise. Tabitha? She says. Harper peers in the lavender room, which used to be her room. It has been painted a creamy beige. The little bedroom is now sage green. The bathroom between the two has a new pedestal sink and a glass shower stall. It's in the process of being retiled. The noise is coming from Billy's room. It sounds like crying, but that can't be right. Harper fears walking in on something. Tabitha? She says a little louder. The noise becomes clearer. Crying. It's her sister. Crying. Harper pokes her head in the room. The floors are now a deep, rich cherry. Unlike all the other rooms, in which the furniture had been removed, Billy's king-size bed remains, along with the stacked milk crates that he saw fit to use as a nightstand. Maybe Tabitha is crying because it's so ugly, Harper thinks, and this makes her smile, although obviously something serious is going on, and Harper mentally prepares herself for the news that Eleanor's condition has worsened. Tabitha? Harper says, too loudly to be ignored now. It's Harper. I'm here. What's wrong? Tabitha lifts her head out of the nest of pillows. Her face is contorted in anguish. Her eyes are swollen. Her face splotched, her hair tangled. She's wearing a man's hot tin roof t-shirt and a pair of denim shorts. The shorts are current Elliot and retail for $150 at the ERF boutique. Harper congratulates herself for recognizing this, and it reassures her that this is, in fact, her sister before her. Tabitha in a hot tin roof t-shirt, though. Wow. There is a first time for everything. What's wrong? Tabitha says. She plucks a tissue from a box on the milk crates and wipes at her face. What's wrong is that you ruined my life. Again. I did. What? Harper says. How did I ruin your life this time? She takes a deep breath and tries to think what she might possibly have done. I've been following your instructions. I take care of Ainsley. She hasn't had a drink all summer, hasn't gone to a single party, hasn't gotten in any trouble. And the store... Okay, maybe things at the store aren't exactly the way that you and Mommy want them, but sales are up 500%. I don't care about the store, Tabitha says. I could care less about the store or Mommy. I care about me. For the first time ever in my life, practically, I care about myself. What? Harper says. I'm lost. I fell in love, Tabitha says. Whoa, Harper says. With whom? Try as she might,
She can't imagine Tabitha falling in love with anyone on the vineyard, except for maybe Kendall. Has Tabitha fallen in love with Kendall?
Franklin Phelps,
Tabitha says.
With Franklin Phelps, Harper thinks. It takes her a moment to connect the dots.
Then she sucks in her breath. Tabitha has fallen in love with Franklin Phelps, Sadie's brother.
I met him at the Ritz, Tabitha says. He was singing. And while he was singing, some jackass started hitting on me at the bar.
Jackass, Harper says. She knows many, many people who fit this description.
Franklin saved me. He brought me home.
When was this? Harper asks.
My first night here, Tabitha says. And then Franklin took on this job. He's the general contractor.
He is? Harper says. I saw Tad leaving, but I didn't think. I mean, forgive my asking, but you knew he was Sadie's brother, right?
How would I know that? Tabitha says. I had no idea, and he didn't tell me. But then, when I found out he was a contractor and I asked him to work on the house, he said he couldn't. He said there were extenuating circumstances, but he wouldn't tell me what they were. Then he changed his mind and agreed to work on the house. I mean, have you even seen this place? It's incredible.
Incredible, Harper says. Her heart is constricting. The house is incredible. And the idea of Tabitha and Franklin working together to make it so is crazy and wonderful. Two people Harper would never have put together in her mind, but she can see it now.
Then he had dinner with his parents, and Sadie was there, and I guess she isn't doing well. But it was still okay, sort of, until Sadie found out that Franklin is working here and dating me. She can't handle it. She asked him to stay away from me.
And he listened to her? Harper says. He's a grown man, first of all, and second of all, you're not me.
You don't get it,
Tabitha says. She manages to rise from the bed, but she seems smaller, waif-like. Heartbreak has diminished her.
Sadie is his sister, and you are my sister.
And I ruin everything, Harper says.
You ruin everything,
Tabitha says.
I've basically lived in fear of people spitting on me since I've been here. Random strangers are bad enough, Harper. But this.
You should have told me you were seeing Franklin, Harper says. I would have warned you.
Warned me you were screwing his sister's husband?
Yes, Harper says.
You are incredibly selfish, Tabitha says. And you always have been. You went with Billy. You left me and never looked back.
Harper stares. Tabitha is hurting, she reminds herself. She is venomous like this because she hurts. But now that Tabitha has brought it up, Harper is being given something she has never had before, a chance to defend herself. That's not true. What we did was fair. We shot for it. I even gave you best out of three, Pony, and you still lost. And no one was more surprised than I was. Getting to go with Billy was the only time I ever beat you at anything. And you've made me feel awful about it for my entire adult life.
After Julian died, I promised myself...
What happened with Julian wasn't my fault, Harper says.
And it wasn't your fault. It was nobody's fault, Tabitha.
It feels wonderful to state her case after all these years of silence. Julian was sick. He died. It was tragic, Tabitha, and I can't pretend to know what it feels like to lose a child, but I assume it's the worst pain I've ever felt times 1,000 or times 100,000.
I never understood why you blamed me, why you ordered me out of the house, forbade me from coming to the funeral, and banished me from your life.
But you are always right, and I am always wrong, so I didn't even question it.
I accepted the blame.
For 14 years, Tabitha? I thought I was evil. That's probably why I got messed up with Joey Bowen. I thought so little of myself. What did it matter if I delivered a package for him? What did it matter if I went to jail? What did it matter if I ended up floating face down in Edgartown Harbor? You had already made me feel despicable. And come to think of it, maybe that's why I've had such trouble with men.
because I was waiting for one of them to assure me I had value. Reed Zimmer was the person who finally did that. He loved me, which made me feel like I was better than I had believed myself to be since Julian died. I knew he was married, and I knew what I was doing was wrong. But I was powerless in the face of how much I loved him and how much I needed him to love me. Maybe now that you're in love with Franklin, you can understand that. Forgive me if I don't equate destroying someone's marriage with love, Tabitha says. You are selfish and reckless and...
And I'm always wrong, Harper says.
You were wrong in stealing another woman's husband, Tabitha says. And you were wrong the night that Julian died. Admit it. If it helps to hear me say it, I'll say it. I'll scream it. I was wrong. The night that Julian died, I was wrong. I made a decision for both of us. I was pushy. But even if I hadn't been pushy, even if I had never come to Nantucket at all, he would still be dead. You know that. In your heart, I believe you know that. Get out, Tabitha says.
Tabitha.
Get out, Tabitha says.
Back at her duplex, Harper throws her bag and Ainsley's bag into the rented Jeep. She is still shaking when she goes to pick Ainsley up at Five Corners.
Change of plans, she says with false cheer. We're taking the ferry home tonight.
Aw,
Ainsley says.
How come we can't stay?
Because, Harper says, we can't.